Welcome to the Conscious Investor. Let's get started. Money and wealth, good, bad, evil, helpful, hindrance. Like, there's so many things that are tied and connected to money and wealth. And today we're going to have a really powerful conversation with Adipia. So Adipia, thank you so much for joining me on The Conscious Investor.
Julie, thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this since we were first connected a few months ago.
Oh, likewise. You do a lot of incredible work, which naturally, when you released your book and Productive Intuition, when you went through your whole book launch, that's when we met, and just the concepts of your book are super profound. And I'm like, I know this is somebody that I need to connect up with. So, yeah. before we dive into conversation, if you want to just give like a nutshell introduction, so people have some context, like, who are you and what are you up to?
Mm-hmm, sure. Yeah. So I would put it like this way. So professionally, I'm like you, I'm in the real estate investment industry. I'm a principal at Alpha Investing, and we syndicate commercial real estate to our investor network. And that whole world of real estate and passive investing and wealth building has been the foundation from which I've actually been able to discern and identify a lot of like really nasty little voices in my head that were telling me things about who I should be. You're either greedy or you're good, like wanting money is bad, especially for women. And so I've been on this like, it's a lifetime journey of personal development, but mine really kind of came to the forefront around 2017, 2018, which was the nexus of my book. And I spent the past few years really diving into who am I? Like, why am I here? How do I serve, but not in like a I'm a servant serve way, but like, how do I bring the best of myself forward and use that as a way to empower others? And so I've found a way kind of naturally to bring that all together so that I show up as an investment professional, but I show up with a lot of this like light and a lot of this idea of self-mastery and knowing myself and really encouraging other people to do the same. Because once I got super clear and super in acceptance of who I am from the inside out and even my spiritual nature, then it was like, there was like this response from the universe. It just gave me like yes after yes after yes. And it's been the most incredible acceleration that I'm so grateful for.
This is just so ironic because I literally just finished recording with Matt Halloran from Be Your Own Loud podcast. And he has a lot of other parts going on with his business that supports it. But we were talking exactly on that topic of self-acceptance, know thyself, the good and the bad, accept it and move forward and leverage it, you know, to empower you to live out your purpose in life. So I love it when podcast episodes just kind of blend into each other, because I did not even plan that. What?
That's amazing. I think it's just, it's that once we get to that point in our lives where we realize that that's the thing, that self-acceptance and like even the cliche of self-love and forgiveness of self, like it's always like self, that once that's really clear, like really, really clear, it seems like, well, A, you can't get away from it. And B, it's no longer a cliche. It's actually the most powerful thing that you could do is say, you know what, I accept myself and I work on myself. And then I'm the catalyst for everything that happens. And I think one of the most challenging things about saying a statement like that sometimes is that, especially for women, that we've been told we are selfish if we think about ourselves. There's historical conditioning for how women are supposed to behave. And that's always in a subservient manner. And in this idea of selflessness is the highest, like it's like the highest good, but in reality, it's not, it's disempowering.
It's interesting, you know, case in point, when you fly, which the cliche analogy, you have to put the air mask on yourself first. I used to fly with our kids when they were little, and they always come up to the parents specifically, you know, and say, remember, you know, air mask on yourself first, not your kid. And, but we forget that in the grand scheme of life. And we think that we can show up as our best selves as we're like pouring out and constantly outputting and giving without, you know, refilling and creating that white space.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That white space is, when we get really busy too, I don't know about you, but I found that this year has been really busy in the best of ways. Like I can only be grateful for how busy it's been and so much success. And I've found it challenging sometimes because for a few years prior to this, I feel like I had more space to do more contemplative work, or let's say I meditated a lot more. And these days, I'm less kind of purposeful stillness, and yet I'm like super dialed in. It's almost like I've taken that stillness and it's within me now. And I'm still kind of getting used to that because I think, oh, maybe I should be sitting still in my like in my quiet space. But in reality, I have a lot of things to put into action. And so that white space for me has been a little bit of a moving target. And I've been watching the way I think about that and like what I'm making that mean. And in reality, I think one thing that I've noticed is really important is your practice changes as you evolve, right? It's like, it's like, I remember telling myself when I had a daily yoga practice, like 90 minutes a day, I love yoga. My body loves yoga. And I was that. Like that was my identity. And so was like having, let's say like a 2-hour kind of personal practice in the morning. I would get up really early. And these days I just can't, that's not my life today. And I have to really be careful of how, what I make that mean about myself. And so anyway, when you brought up the white space, it really immediately was like, oh, are you meditating enough? Like that little critical voice was like immediate. I'm like, what is going on right now?
I love that you're bringing this up, is we're always assigning meaning and value to something.
Yeah.
We're assigning a meaning to what white space means, what, you know, our life and practices mean. We're assigning meaning to what money means. And so we're constantly having this internal dialogue and just like slapping labels all over the place as this is what this means. So, you know, let's dive into money a bit. And, you know, some of that perspective shift, I don't know if it was a full perspective shift on you or what your relationship with money, how that's evolved for you. But I know you and I were talking offline about, you know, money can feel good or bad. And it feels like in our space, in the investment community, we both, you know, I mean, the highly successful people that are high levels of integrity, high levels of contribution, highly amazing people, like just extraordinary people leveled up, and they have the means as well. So we both know that, you know, having means and wealth does not mean monetary wealth does not mean that you're this terrible, rotten person who is soulless, right? So, and yet on the outside of that, oftentimes, you know, people will assign this meaning. Well, if I have money or if they have money, they must be, and let me assign a meaning to them. What are your thoughts surrounding that?
Yeah, it's been, this year has actually been really important for me to really understand how much of those negative narratives were in my own head. And when I finally like identified them, and I think of it as like, kind of like a reaching back, like inside of myself and like grabbing something and like bringing it forward and looking at it and thinking like, what are you? And like, where did you come from? That's like very much the case with these narratives. And they were so deep that I didn't even know they were there. Like, I didn't even recognize that they were there. And, you know, until I did. And then it started this cascade of, well, where did this come from? Why do I believe it? Because for most of the time with negative beliefs, they're not really ours, we picked them up. They're actually somebody else's mm-hmm. that we picked up somewhere. And they're from like parents, family, media. Oh my God, the media, like so much. Like how much media is there that basically says a version of if a woman wants money, she's like money hungry and she just wants to marry like this rich man and not do anything like the kept woman or like some version of a prostitute or something, which it's like, there's so much of that when you watch shows, when you just like, it is everywhere. And then people pick it up and absorb it and then spit it back out. So then, you know, and then there's the, you're either greedy or you're good. I mean, that's like the primary, that's like the primary narrative that I know that I had. And even though I chose to be in this type of career really early on, like I started working in a bank when I was 18, because I understood that financial independence was empowering. And I had that as an intention, along with things like wanting to make my parents proud and wanting to be successful. And that was and is a measure of success tangibly, materially. And so like I recognize all of that in myself. And then I recognize that I've been like battling that internally, like my whole adult life, is that like I'm going into this career wanting a lot of what feels successful, like accomplishment. It just like, to me, it feels really good. Like when a project comes to completion, like you get your total, you know, ROI or IRR, all this kind of thing. You're just like that feels really good to succeed. And I think everybody wants to feel that successful. And our world, our society really is built on a system where money is kind of like the value that gives that to you. And especially when we choose investments as an industry. So I had all of that. And I had these weird ideas in my head about that. Well, that makes you a bad person. So for like the better part, well, the over 20 years of having that constant battle inside, which basically like there's a push and pull and you're not really going anywhere. And that would like, in a way, that was me. And so what was happening, I would subconsciously, unconsciously sabotage myself. Mm-hmm. And truly, like, it's wild to me that like just this year, it finally like hit me in the head. And I said, hold on a second. Like, I'm doing this to myself. If I'm not like, quote unquote, succeeding, I'm super successful and like incredibly happy and grateful for everything that I have. But I was like, I'm doing something to myself because I'm not feeling like I'm reaching my potential. It has nothing to do with money. It has to do with my potential. And it comes from what I'm telling myself about what it means to have money. And then once that was really clear, once I kind of like pulled that like barnacle off my body, so to speak, right? Or like a mm-hmm. leech, it's kind of like an energy leech. And I got rid of it. Then it was like the whole world, the whole universe, like energetically, however you want to put it, it just like opened up. And I just got all of these incredible opportunities and responses. And so that's a really long way of saying my relationship with wealth and money and abundance has been complex. And I've been my own kind of jailer, and I was the one that had to set myself free.
There's so much there. It's like, let's just stick on the spot where your final words, I was my own jailer. I kept myself there. And I think that that's what so many people do. Like my logo is a bird on top of a bird cage and it's symbolic, like get out of the cage. You don't have to be in the cage. The door is open. Do you want to fly out or not? And that's the way our life is we have the opportunity, but are you going to fly out and fly in the world? Or are you going to stay? And why are we going to even stay? Now we have to evaluate that as individuals. Why am I staying in this cage? Why am I allowing that to happen? So what would you say really gave you the strength and courage to look inward? Because I know the personal development work I've done at different points is very painful. And it's also challenging. Like you, I've had several aha moments where I'm like, that was so hidden deep, deep down, that thinking, that philosophy that, like, as you said, I didn't even know it was there. And then, you know, I was working with a coach and just questioning and working through it and reading. And it's like, oh my word, that's not something I want part of me.
Yeah. So the personal work, that's, you know, it's also called like shadow work, or you know, dark nights of the soul, or what have you. And most of the time that comes upon us, we don't go looking for it because nobody really wants to do it. Nobody wants to do that work on purpose. Like, it's definitely not fun. And I have not found any other like kind of definition or reason for it other than it is the way it is, like just part of like our human journey. For some of us, like not necessarily everyone, but of everyone that I've ever met that's had profound life changing experiences, it hasn't been this like the sky opens and the angels sing and you're bathed in light and everything feels amazing. It feels horrific at first, because it's like the equivalent of, so if we think about like let's use an oak tree, and it starts inside of an acorn. Well, that little plant has to break the acorn open. And that's not it. You can't, like, it's breaking something open. It's a destruction in a way, right? Mm-hmm. And so that acorn is the conditions of our lives that we need to overcome in order to bloom and sprout and grow into that mighty tree. And so for me, I try to put it in, I guess, metaphorical context and try to take the personal story out of it. And so I kind of land on this, like, we have to have the courage to look at the things that we don't want to look at, because freedom is on the other side of those things that are really actually not that bad once you face them. Like now when I do personal work and I see things about myself, I actually have learned to use a bit of levity where I kind of laugh at myself. I'm like, oh, there's my ego again. Or like, oh, there's another one. Like, and it's not, I'm not making it mean that I'm a bad person. I'm looking at it like, well, here's another thing that I can look at and choose to release or choose to hold on to in judgment. And the more I just let it go without making it mean anything, without like shaming myself, the easier it is for that to just go away, to the point where it accelerates and it becomes less painful and less uncomfortable. And it's a faster process.
Definitely. I can relate to that, to everything that you're saying. But I think that we're conditioned to assign meaning, and we were conditioned to assign good or bad, right or wrong to everything. And, you know, if you can't make a decision that something's right, wrong, good, bad, then, well, you really don't have any substance in your life, and you're, you know, just living a relativistic life, or, you know, and there's all this meaning assigned. It's like, no, really, that isn't good or bad. It just is what it is. And I think I want to grow out of that. I don't think I want that in my life.
Yeah.
I want to lean into that. That's really great.
Yeah. That's the power of choice. Like, I always think that like choice is actually one of the most powerful mechanisms that we have. Like, you know, we're all to some degree like control freaks. It's also part of the ego. It's part of the human kind of nature. But choice is actually a version of having control, because we might not be able to control what happens to us or outside of us, but we have control over ourselves. And the more that we can exercise that degree of control over how we think about things, how we assign meaning, the more we actually ironically feel in control. And so it's like this weird backwards way of getting to control without being in control, which of course it's always like a paradox, which is again, like human, I don't know. It's like this human spirit, universal thing where I'm like, it's a paradox. Can't figure it out. I'm just going to go with it.
Okay. Do you ever get to the point that I get to that exact point where I'm like, why am I making my brain sweat so much? Yeah. I mean, it just is. Okay, move on. I don't have to dig down deep on every single thing in life.
Yeah, totally. I went, when I was going through like what I call it the dark night of my ego, not my soul, because like my soul was fine, but I was really going through a massive identity crisis and just like total destruction. Like a lot was going kind of quote unquote wrong. And this was back like 2017, 2018. And it's really the catalyst for the book and why I wrote about what I learned about, you know, my integrating that side of myself. Cause I was too much in my brain before. And I got so hyper focused on finding everything that was wrong with me that I was making myself miserable. And then I kind of learned over time that I don't have to be so serious even about my personal work, like lighten up. And that has actually been my sort of new practice, has been moving into trying to, and I do say the word try on purpose because I don't naturally go to joy. So like trying to stay more in a place of lightness, in a place of joy, laughing at myself, like not making such a big deal about it. Like I can't remember whose quote this is, but it's something along the lines of, it's probably like a Zen or a Buddhist quote about, think lightly of yourself, but deeply of the world.
Mm, yes.
And I'm like, that's it right there. I'm not that important. My little issues are not that important in the big scheme of things. How about I redirect all that attention to something that is actually more, this is not as miserable. I do it to myself.
Understanding our place in the world, our place, I like to look at myself on the timeline of, you know, humanity on planet Earth. And, you know, you just look at the scheme of a timeline and then you look at your small little contribution on the timeline. And when that perspective, that tends to help me have that balance to say, is it, what's more important, this larger scheme or, you know, what am I going to do with my little part on this? You know, this is, I'm a nexus to something. So, you know, let me leverage that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say too, like that has been powerful for me also in the context of like larger kind of world issues, because we know everything that's wrong with the world today. We can have that. Like, I don't think humans were wired to know everything that's going on in every corner of the planet at every moment in time. Like it's very overwhelming. And so I would get really caught up in thinking about how much is wrong with the world. I don't know how to fix it, which sounds ridiculous when I say it, but I was actually in that place. And then there was a similar process of saying, well, you know, kind of reasoning with myself and saying, well, logically you can't fix the whole world. So what do you have control over? And so when I would spin out, because I also feel a lot, like energetically, like I really feel a lot of things. And so I would have to set some boundaries for myself around like mental boundaries and like emotional and energetic boundaries. And then just really focus on like, what's one thing that I can do that is a quote unquote good thing, to use a binary term, but like, mm-hmm. But what am I doing that is good? And then I could list so many things, like even just like having a conversation with a friend that might need some advice, or just like having a laugh with somebody, or just, you know, just whatever it is. And like, so if it's like a ripple effect and a butterfly effect, then again, we're back to the beginning of it's down to me and that kind of selfish place of like, what can I do and what am I doing? And like, rather than focusing on the world outside of myself, I focus on myself in a constructive way. And then I don't spin out anymore. And then I think, well, if one person or if this one thing I did this well, then it's like one foot in front of the other, one step at a time. And I can be proud of that.
This is really important. I hope people are hearing what you are saying. So I didn't even understand what an empath was until, I don't know, 2 years ago. That just wasn't even in my wheelhouse. And I heard somebody talking and I saw, you know, just connecting with the energy levels and saying like, I feel people's energy. I've never been able to describe that adequately necessarily to my husband, because I tried for years. And then I started, you know, just doing some work and learning, and just, I didn't like, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense. I think more people absorb the energy around them without even realizing it. And they're connecting with it. And they want to make, so for me with my faith, in my faith community, it would be like, oh, I don't know, maybe you don't believe the same things. It's like, well, no, I believe all the same things. And there is this energy transfer that is taking place across the world. Let's just go to the clouds real fast and look what happens, you know, in a storm, and why, you know, we have thunder and lightning, right? So just like looking at it in even a simplistic way like that, right? And to understand this transfer is constantly taking place. And as you said, we weren't designed to absorb all of this information. It is far too much. So then I love it. I love everything you're saying about creating some, you know, boundaries that are healthy and practical. I hope that people will apply this into their lives, because I think a lot of people are, again, staying inside the cage by choice because they feel they need to interact and engage all of these things that they have no control over.
Yeah.
So just let them go.
The emotional energetic piece is the one that we are the least aware of, because again, like, we're not taught to actually honor that part of ourselves. Like, we're, you know, women are like, basically it's like men aren't allowed to feel their feelings or emotions, and women are considered weak for feeling theirs. That's the, like, pretty much the world out there, what it's taught us. And in a way, I think actually men get it worse, because they're told they're not even allowed to have feelings. Like, they're not allowed to feel anything. And you know, energy is neither created nor destroyed. So if you feel an emotion, which is energy, and you can't express it or release it, what happens to it goes in your body. It stays, it's like legitimately stays there, and it affects you. It causes physical disease, causes outbursts. It causes it causes all kinds of so many consequences. And we all kind of, I think we need to have that relationship with, you know, you could call it your emotional body. But I'm the same. I felt it, but I never knew that's what it was, because I didn't have anybody to talk to, certainly not growing up, that I could feel other people's emotions. And so I've really had to work with that a lot. And it kind of goes with that work of asking, sometimes if I feel something, especially if it's really strong along the lines of grief or sadness, then I have to ask, is this mine? And that's just self-inquiry. Yeah. That's just a self-inquiry. I'm I'm feeling this, so acknowledging it, I feel this, where is it, you know, what caused me to feel this? Usually it'll something I read or something I saw, or sometimes I just feel it. Mm-hmm. And then I have to wonder, I ask myself, it's a self-inquiry of that's where I go into stillness. And I say, what is this? And then, is it mine? And my body will give me a response, and I will get an immediate understanding of, you know, maybe it's mine, something that's triggered in me from the past or what have you, or I'm just processing an emotion, or it's really not mine and I've just picked it up. And so there's I think the past 5 years, 10 years, but mostly the past 5 years, there's been so much more acceptance of our energetic nature. Quantum science has put it forefront. You cannot argue that this does not exist. I can point to multiple, physicists that can explain the nature of energy and also the bioenergetic nature of emotions. And so it really behooves all of us to understand our own emotional nature, because I have a lot of anger. And so what happens with me sometimes is that with my husband, we trigger each other with our anger. And I had to really understand what was going on there, because that was not going to end well if I didn't get a handle on what it was and take responsibility for my piece of it. And then as I started to do that, I started to understand him better, myself better. And then those anger trigger fights just don't happen anymore. But I had to, first of all, accept that I had that in my nature, and then understand when it was me being triggered, or when I was picking up, or if I was picking up his anger and it would just take me, it would just take over. And then it would be then be over. So that's a real live example for me that's been really powerful from in the realm of relationships. But overall, the empath, we're all empaths to some degree or another. So I'm glad that you've kind of been in that for yourself, because it's really life-changing.
But as you said, you know, as a kid, it didn't just magically appear one day. Mm-hmm. So I can go back and, you know, similar to you, I'm sure you can go back as a child and say it just explains so much for myself, and also gives me an ability then to work with my daughter, who I can see has a lot of these tendencies, and to teach her how to use these and how to engage it. And how to not own what's not yours. That's a really difficult part, to know the difference. This is me, this is not me. And to be able to, well, maybe you get a, you know, you get to scoot ahead in this part of learning on life. And
yeah, it's really so much about that acceptance. And then also, I think it's amazing for kids to understand that, because I was also taught don't express your emotions by my parents to some degree, or that it was bad. And so it gets bottled up, and then you actually don't know how to relate to people. But like at the level of relationships, which is everything really, I mean, everything's in relation to something else. And so having that emotional maturity at a young age and being able to accept and acknowledge my feelings means that, like, for your daughter, she can accept it and acknowledge other people's emotions and feelings and not take it personally. Like, how much have you internalized? I've internalized so much that was not mine. And I'm like, I'm done with that. So imagine growing up without internalizing other people's crap. Like, how liberating is that?
And it does happen, because she'll come and she'll tell me about some experience with, you know, some other kids, and it will be like, well, you know, sometimes she'll just say, that's really sad for them.
Good for her.
She's just fine. I'm like, oh man, that's so cool. So amazing. All right. I'm going to shift gears, because I don't want the time to go by without talking about this woman's mastermind that you've created and launched. You've done so many amazing things to support women. Can you tell us about the women's mastermind?
Yeah. So this is sort of like the culmination of this whole year. And the dissolving of that narrative around money is that I've put together a mastermind for women. It's called Women of Wealth. And it's really meant to be, at its core, a space and a community for women to own wealth, not just tangible outside wealth, but to own it from the inside, to get rid of all of the negativity, to get rid of all those like weird thoughts and things. And it starts from an energetic inner perspective, because that's the foundation of everything. And then it just cascades outward. So it cascades into just owning the conversations, like having conversations about, well, what's, like, you know, not just your financial situation, but like, what's your big number? Like, what's your family office like size that you want to be? Like, what are you gunning for? Like, let's, like having money and talking about it and building wealth is sexy. It's amazing. It's empowering. And when we have that level of confidence about where we stand materially and financially, then all of a sudden there's access to more ways to multiply that money. As we know in real estate, like, money makes money for you. And that's really a big thing for women to shift out of, like, working for their money and into, my money works for me. And then the more resources we have as women, what do we do with it? We don't hoard it. We turn it around, because we're values driven. You know, it's like, I had to get over that idea too. Like, oh, money, well, my wealth means just this kind of bucket over here, but it's not. Wealth is like, I'm deploying it, like, into venture, into female founded companies, into whatever it is that's really meaningful and impactful to me. And so I'm like spreading this all around, and it's growing, and they're growing. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm like a gardener. So, yes. And it, you know, I'm like,
I love that.
It's
my money garden.
It is. And I'm like, look at all these beautiful plants and flowers and trees and orchards that I'm contributing to. And that is like, that has been the most joyful. It has nothing to do with money. It has everything to do with abundance. And the mastermind is really a way for more women to do the same, and to do the practical things of, like, how to get to that feeling is by taking action, because I don't want to just talk about stuff. I want to actually take action. I want to be like, it's a self-directed investment club. We'll look at things, we'll vet them, we'll figure it out. Everybody does, you know, does what makes sense to them. But in general, it's a space for us to just grow together and take that power out into the world.
I love this on so many levels. What I find is that women ties money and security together oftentimes. And this relationship with money and women is just so convoluted. And I love that it's saying, no, we can have this, and we can be in control of it, and we can direct it, and we can grow it. And this is it's fun. And it is sexy and it's tons of fun and you can contribute back so significantly into the world. It just feels like a safe spot to go and do that. Now, when I think about some women, they're thinking, oh my gosh, that sounds so freaking intimidating.
Right.
I don't know if I want to go there, but I want that. But I, right? That hesitation of, oh, that's who I want to be. I want to be a woman like that, but oh, they're smarter than me.
Yeah.
That's what we do. Those are the narratives that we tell ourselves as women. You know, they've done this, they've done that. I'll just slow them down. Right. So how do you address some of those, you know, hesitations?
Oh my God. It's such a good one. Yeah. Like I'm not good at math. Like neither am I. I'm terrible at math. It's not about math. Like it's like not about math at all. I would say that like the mastermind is more about that. It's more about overcoming that because that is actually the very first step. And then from there, everything opens up. And then there's a support of women that are going to hold you accountable to that joy and that abundance. But like, I would say if somebody's feeling that it's because it's exactly the signal to say that this is something that I need, because the number one thing is that we don't talk about it. And if we don't start talking about it, energetically speaking, we will not magnetize that to ourselves. Mm-hmm. We magnetize, I can't, or I'm not deserving, or, you know, some level of worthiness, as opposed to saying, you know what, I'm going to overcome that discomfort. And like we talked about, freedom is on the other side of discomfort and the freedom and the joy and all of it. So to me, it's always like if something has a strong like emotional trigger that's like really uncomfortable, like I'll usually like feel it in the pit of my stomach. It's a signal that there's something there that I need to look at. And I would hope that that a first step for anyone that feels that way is to say, I can at least have a conversation to see if this is something that I'm ready to undertake, because the support, as you know, is that like, especially in the investment space, especially in real estate, like you said, there's like the most amazing people. All we want to do is help other people feel this good about, it's really that overflow. It's like that never ending. Well, it never ends. The more I have of energy, of love, of abundance, the more I want to give to others. Mm-hmm. When I felt poor, when I felt undeserving, I was kind of Scroogey, right? I was like, no, I don't have enough. I don't have enough to give. But I had to take that step beyond that. And it's like a total, like it like flips around entirely. And I can only say that it's something that you experience inside of yourself. So if somebody's ready for that or just wants like a taste of it, you know, why not have the conversation and see if a community of women that won't let you play small when it comes to this kind of stuff feels like a big leap, then maybe it's because that's exactly what you need to do.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. If your heart is pounding, you're like, oh, I don't know if I want to be held accountable to that level. Oh my goodness. You know, that sounds scary. That's exactly where you need to be, because nothing good comes in our comfort zone. Everything that we need and that purpose that we have to give to the world, like our contribution comes through our discomfort. It doesn't come through us, you know, being all cozy and comfortable. Mm-hmm. Like nothing good ever came in the comfort zone. I can't think of a figure in history where it's like, oh, that was the most monumental moment in history. They were so comfortable. That's just not ever. I mean, we could just look at every poster child of historical events and be like, exactly. Yeah, that was uncomfortable.
Yeah. I love that. It's so true.
It's so true. It's laughable. It's like, it's so preposterous. Oh, Adavia, this has just been it has been pure joy. Like that's the word for it. So I like, just so you know, just such a wonderful conversation. And I love all the facets that we were able to dive into. I know this has served people well. If you want to go ahead and just like remind people once again, where they can go for the Women's Mastermind. And there are lots of, you know, gentlemen out there that are like, you know what, I want to see what kind of investments that she has through her company. So how do people connect up with you?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to connect with me is on LinkedIn. So if you just search my name, Adapia, A-D-A-P-I-A, I show up first. So I'm pretty easy.
Really?
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. I mean, there was one time a software company called Adapia as well years ago, but I'm pretty sure I come up first in Google search too. So I'm like super easy to find. I would say connect with me on LinkedIn. That's really where I kind of collect everyone, mm-hmm. because I have Alpha Investing for Real Estate. I have my website. I have my book. I do other, you know, I do other alternative investments as well, but that's really the place to go. And then for the mastermind, it's Women of Wealth, but it's women with an X because we're really trying to be as inclusive as possible. So Women of Wealth, and to check that out. But yeah, find me on LinkedIn and like, let me know what you're interested in. And my goal is really just to spread this message of empowerment through financial independence for everyone, like not just for women. The mastermind is for women because energetically that's where I'm placing that focus. But the idea of empowerment and financial independence and what we do with our wealth is for everybody.
I love it. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of The Conscious Investor. Again, pure joy.
Thank you, Julie. I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
To all you wonderful listeners, make sure you go over to LinkedIn, connect up with Adapia, and check all things Adapia out because it's amazing. And until next time, live big, love bigger.
Feeling alone, disconnected? Conscious investors often feel alone or disconnected because of their unique perspective and desire to expand their thinking. But the journey of a lifetime isn't meant to be solo or forged by grit alone. Join the Conscious Investor community on Facebook, link arms, exchange ideas, and expand your thinking on finances, relationship, and community. Join the Conscious Investor group on Facebook today.